welcome to another edition of The Shanna Plan. My name is Kyle Posey. This is episode 87, episode Dwight Clark, Rest in Power. I am joined as always by Akash. Akash, man, we are a couple weeks away from the draft. What's going on, man?
What's up, KP? Did any of those Masters bets cash this week, or how are we looking?
I hopped on Scotty Live on Sunday. So I remember, if you remember, I'm sure you're watching it. There was, I think it was right around hole 7 or 8, maybe even a couple holes earlier than that. It started to, Cam started to make a little bit of a run.
Yeah.
And it got down close to even money. It was actually even money. And I was like, this seems too good to be true. He was just a gamer, man. He's been on a run since essentially the Super Bowl. And that, I didn't think that was going to let up. So got lucky there just to get that live. But Brooks, man, what the hell?
Didn't even make the cut.
Yeah. You stop embarrassing us on live TV like that. It was fun, though. It was fun to watch. What'd you think? What was your takeaway from the Masters?
Just that Scottie Scheffler's on an absolute heater. I mean, he's at, what, 4 wins and like 6 starts? He looks like the 49ers in like that December, January stretch where they just went on an absolute run. Just one for the ages. I think he's the only golfer other than Tiger Woods that's won 4 starts in a season. So congrats to him. But Masters is always fun. It's like a historic tournament, so it's always fun to watch during the weekend.
Speaking of fun to watch, Debo Samuel. And as all of you know, fresh off of a historic year, a year that we probably are not going to see anytime soon, the narrative is starting to shift a little bit for whatever reason. We're starting to hear that, you know, he's been schemed open and that, you know, Kyle Shanahan does some of the heavy lifting for him, that maybe he's not a great separator in man-to-man coverage. I went back yesterday, it was on Tuesday, just through some of the 49ers, through all of the 49ers games, and nope, none of that is true. Debo Samuel does a lot of the work by himself. A lot of the 49ers offense revolved around Debo. And obviously, some of these things are coming from the team, and they're just playing hardball. I understand it. It's a negotiating tactic. So Debo took to Instagram, and I don't know who it was. I don't know if it was agent or it was homeboys, but he was on Instagram and essentially, if it ain't 25 mil, we don't want it. And that is a great, just a great headline caption right there. And it'll get people talking. And Debo knows what he's doing when he's doing that. Like, let's be very clear. If I'm him, like, I love it. If think about the year he just had, you want to capitalize on everything possible, right? So he's seeing all these other wide receivers get paid. Why wouldn't he want to get paid? Why wouldn't he want to get paid like them, especially knowing he was the catalyst for the 49ers offense? So it bothers some people. They're thinking he's being childish or whatnot, but it's just in today's day and age, players are going to talk through social media because they know that'll get the people talking. Did you see that? And what was your initial reaction when you did see it?
Is that the comment where Debo Samuel responded with slime?
No, that was another one. So, yep, he's making the social media rounds for sure.
The funniest part about that is half the people didn't even know what it meant, and so a lot of the people are like slime, like. So, I mean, he's taking his talents to like Nickelodeon or,
you know, they
just didn't know what it meant. So that was funny. But yeah, it gives you a window into how these players think and how they view average annual value. I think they really take pride in being like, you know, I make $30 million a year. I make $25 million a year, even though that's just not how it works, right? Cap hits can be spread around. Money can be unguaranteed. So it gives you a window into like players really care about the yearly payout. And we saw this with Trent Williams a couple years ago. He, you know, the Niners added like a ton of unguaranteed money at the end to make sure that he got $10,000 more in average annual value over David Bakhtiari. And so it feels like Debo Samuel kind of on the similar mindset of trying to one up the last biggest contract in terms of average value. And, you know, good for him. After the season he had, after the 7-8 game stretch down the season where he basically carried the 49ers to the playoffs single-handedly, you know, a lot of his big plays, like you mentioned, they're just like screen passes. Like the play in the NFC Championship game where he scored a touchdown, the Niners offense was, you know, in shambles up until that point. they throw him a little, you know, bubble screen. He takes it to the house. The play in Chicago for like 83 yards, screen pass, third and like 20, basically saved their season on that play. That's basically what he did at different times. It was just give the ball to Deebo Samuel, let him make some magic happen. And more often than not, he made magic happen. So I see why, you know, I can see why he wants to get paid the $25 million or whatever. But if you're the Niners, you know, it's April, it's early in the negotiation process. You got to play hardball. You got to kind of change the narrative around a little bit. So that's what they're doing by, you know, kind of planting the seed that he was schemed open or he was a schemed player. They can replace him. So that's all they're trying to do. And it's just part of the negotiation process. And I know fans like to get caught up in every single thing, but it's early. It's early. Just be patient.
Yeah, I think that's what people need to hear, that it's April. It's early. And if this were July, then sure, you have plenty of reason to freak out. But we have a long way to go. And that's around the time when the 49ers generally extend their players, you know, from George Kittle, Fred Warner. There are a few examples. So Albert Breer, Sports Illustrated, he touched on this topic and he said, so to me, the middle ground here might be the Niners giving upfront cash to Samuel. And Dandy, who's agent, we'll talk about in a second, he said, so maybe you'll see a five-year extension, and that's $75 million packed into the first 3 years with smaller numbers on the back. And so essentially front-loading his contract. As you mentioned, players want to talk about how much money they make. And to talk about that, they need those higher-end contracts, or they need those contracts to be front-loaded. Breer continued, he said, my guess is Samuel will shoot for more than that, $75 million. And that might be too rich for the Niners. But there's going to be some type of middle ground there. And he continued, whether it's attainable based on where a negotiation is, I don't know. They're probably going to receive some calls about Samuel's availability, because when you see a star player acting out on social media, why wouldn't you do that? And again, Breer concluded that I think that a real effort to get a new contract will happen before then. So, of course, there's a chance that Deebo gets traded, but the odds of him getting traded are just so slim. But you brought up a good point, and Breer actually gave us a good segue there. So Deebo has an agent, and his agent also has two wide receivers who are very, very good, who came out during the same year, who are all looking to get extended this year. So can you talk about who his agent is, who he represents, and why it might make more sense for them to push Deebo to be paid first?
Torrey Dandy of CAA, Creative Artists Agency, represents Deebo Samuel, AJ Brown, and DK Metcalf. You might have heard of the other two guys. They ball out as well. And shout out Torrey Dandy. I mean, he got three dudes in the second round to sign with his agency, and now they're probably the three best receivers in that class, right? Two of them are Terry McLaurin. But Jesus Christ. And so if you're Torrey Dandy, right, and you have Deebo, AJ Brown, DK Metcalf, all, you know, done with their third season. They don't have the fifth year option because they weren't drafted in the first round. They all have legitimate cases to get paid, you know, a sizable contract extension, right? If you're Torrey Dandy, you're trying to get, you know, if you're trying to go in order, right, you're trying to get the player that has the worst case for a contract extension paid first, because now that becomes the floor for AJ Brown's deal and DK Metcalf's deal. So out of the three players, I think the player that has the worst case is Deebo Samuel. I mean, his high end is as good as those two guys, but across the 3 years, because of injuries, Deebo Samuel's probably been less consistent than the other two guys. And I know AJ Brown's been banged up. He's had a couple surgeries, but he's been fantastic for Tennessee. DK Metcalf, I think, has the most receiving touchdowns of any non-first round receiver in the first 3 years. I saw that Warren Sharp say that. So those three guys all have great cases, but I think if you're Torrey Dandy, you start with Deebo Samuel, you get Deebo Samuel paid. Then you take that contract, you go to either Tennessee or Seattle and say, look, Deebo Samuel got paid this. Your client or your player is better than Deebo Samuel. You got to pay me at least that. And I think that's why the public pressure on trying to get Deebo Samuel paid is a lot higher than it is for AJ Brown or DK Metcalf. I mean, all three of these guys have to get paid. But yet we only hear about Deebo Samuel. We only hear about what Deebo's doing on Instagram, or, you know, what he's saying, or what his agent's saying, or what the Niners are saying. Nothing on AJ Brown and DK Metcalf. And it's interesting because they're all represented by the same guy. So wouldn't you think that he has the same urgency for all three? But it seems like he's got this plan to try to get Debo paid first. And that's why they're pushing hard on the Niners. And I don't think the Niners are going to get bullied. You know, the Niners do these deals patiently. And I think they're just going to say, well, we'll see you in July, you know, and give us the next few months to work out this negotiation.
Yeah, they're going to stand pat. That's what they do. That's what they always do. Jimmy Ward was actually on IG Live talking about Parag. And he said, like, he's a damn good negotiator. This is like what he does. He lives for this. This is why he makes a lot of money. So this is Debo's, I imagine this is Debo's first time being a part of anything like this. So again, like the natural human reaction is for him to be upset because he goes to the 49ers with a number. The 49ers are like, no shot. And in his mind, he's being disrespected, but that's just how negotiation works. And that's at any level. So not too surprising, but it is nice to tie it all in with the agent. We don't know if this is true, but maybe, you know, he's, I don't want to call him a puppet, but he has to go and be the guy. Hey, I'm going to get paid first. I need to get paid first because that's how this is going to work for our business. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to happen. So again, don't worry. Debo is going to be around for a long time. Not too much of a surprise there. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And again, whether he gets his guarantees up front, how it's stretched out through the contract, that's really what the details will come down to. Okay, let's flip the script here to another wide receiver. So in 2021, there were 26 wide receivers who surpassed 1,000 yards in the NFL. 49ers had one, but they did not have two. And there are a few other teams that had two, like the Bengals, the Chargers. And I don't think when I bring this up, we're talking about Brandon Ayuk, because Brandon Ayuk has not gone over 1,000 yards. We thought he might this year. So, of course, 2020, great rookie year. It seemed like, you know, he was going to take off this past season. And then leading into training camp, like he was a guy. He was a guy who, you know, we all thought would have not a Debo Samuel type year, but he would go over 1,200 yards. That didn't happen. We all remember the doghouse. He was losing out reps. Going through those games with Debo, I saw guys on the outside, like Trent Sherfield was running the same routes that you would expect Brandon Ayuk to run. So that was a thing. And again, like Ayuk didn't have a bad season, but you would have thought that he would have had a better season, I guess is a better way to put it. So his first year, 60 receptions, 748 yards. So having a 17,000 yard season. We thought it might happen this past year. He didn't have a breakout game until Trey Lance's first start, naturally. So he had a 6-catch, 89-yard performance. He seemed like he was turning the corner. In two of the next three games, Ayuk went over 85 receiving yards, but he went another month with being quiet, and it wasn't until, again, Lance's next start where Ayuk had over 94 yards. Finished the season strong against the Rams, and then, I mean, the 49ers offense was very forgettable in the playoffs, so wasn't really anybody who did anything in the playoffs on that side of the ball. Now, turn the page, 2022, will Brandon Ayuk get over 1,000 yards? So, and the reason I bring up 26 wide receivers going over 1,000 and how there were a few teammates on there. So when you think of the 49ers, like Debo's going to get his no matter what. And let's say he is one of the receivers who is 1,000 yards. It comes down to, will it be Kittle or will it be Ayuk? Kittle was close. Ayuk was close. I believe Kittle had 900. Or right around 900, and Ayuk was a little over 800. So is it because we have two games when Lance was under center, and obviously you can extrapolate that, and he would comfortably go over 1,000 yards. They've been working out this offseason. I mean, we saw the shenanigans after every time Jimmy missed him. Ayuk would throw a little mini temper tantrum. That was pretty hilarious. I imagine he's going to be better with Trey Lance. I imagine he's better suited for Trey Lance. That doesn't guarantee success, though, and I feel like it's important to point that out, that just because he has had, you know, a couple of good games with Lance doesn't mean Ayuk's going to be the guy, especially with who they have on the roster right now. Like, they have a lot of good players, and they have a lot of mouths to feed, and you have to get those guys the ball often. Do you think year three is finally when we see Ayuk break out?
Absolutely. From week 9 onwards last season, and that was around the Chicago game, and I think we talked about it, maybe you tweeted out the clip where there's a block that Brandon Ayuk makes in the run game down the left sideline for Elijah Mitchell. he chases the corner like 20 yards down the field, and then he kind of celebrates after the run block. And you can tell that's kind of when he got his groove back a little bit. And then I remember the Jacksonville game, maybe it was the Chicago game. He had the 2-point conversion. Yeah, I think it was the Chicago game where he had the 2-point conversion, and you could just sense a little bit of his mojo coming back. And so since that point through the playoffs, Brandon Ayuk had 810 yards receiving, had 52 catches, 4 touchdowns. So he's 52, 800, 4 touchdowns from week 9 onwards. So that was like 11 games, basically, I think. So now if you were to extrapolate that over 17-game season, he's easily going to cross 1,000 yards. And I think the Trey Lance connection is important to point out. Trey Lance and Brandon Ayuk have now worked out together back-to-back off seasons, and especially this offseason down in Southern California. I know they've both been there a lot. They've worked out, you know, there were some pictures that went surfaced on the internet this weekend with Trey Lance and some of the Niners receivers minus Debo. And I think Ayuk is going to benefit from playing with Lance. I think he's going to have a breakout year. I think he's going to come into the year knowing exactly what's expected of him in both the run and the pass game. And I think he's going to make that jump that Debo made from year 2 to year 3. I think Ayuk's going to have something similar headed into this year. And I think he's easily going to have 1,000 yards. And I think you're going to view that draft class differently, right? We view Justin Jefferson extremely high in that draft class, or CeeDee Lamb, who's now the number one wide receiver in Dallas. And I think Brandon Ayuk doesn't necessarily have that perception, partially because he plays on a team with Debo Samuel and George Kittle. But I think this year that narrative is going to start to change. And, you know, for Jimmy Garoppolo, when situations get tough, he always leans on George Kittle, right? Based off of the relationship they have off the field, based off of how much time they've spent together, probably working out. And I think Brandon Ayuk is going to be that guy for Trey Lance, given how their relationship is on and off the field.
Yeah, that'll be something interesting to see for sure, to see who Trey leans on third downs under pressure, because you're going to go back to, you know, what your muscle memory tells you to do. For Jimmy G, that was find Kittle, which is great. Like, why wouldn't you find 85? So I think we'll have an idea where Lance wants to go with the ball in training camp, like who he leans on. And I guess it'll be fun just to see how that develops and evolves as the season goes along. But it should be a big season for Ayuk, man. He's very talented. Again, thinking about how they used him against the Rams that final week of the season, it was like a five-step slant or quick post glance, whatever you want to call it. It was actually a fade route down the sideline, which we hadn't really seen all season that Jimmy threw. So those type of routes outside the numbers, timing routes, whether it's, you know, something as simple as a slant and a curl, that will be great for him because he is a receiver who can win one-on-one, who is an isolation receiver, and the 49ers do need that, especially somebody on the outside. So it should make the offense go well. We have a comment here that says, I say Jennings over 700 yards a season. Ayuk and Debo have over 1,000 yards, and Kittle will be close to 1,000. Everybody gets 1,000, baby. That's a lot. I'm actually going in the opposite direction. Let's talk about that a little bit. I think that they are moving away from the Jennings type of receiver, that big body wide receiver. He finished strong, and you have to give him credit for that. I don't think that he's going to have a big role next year, and I would go as far as to say that there is going to be somebody that I don't know who that is, but I would say Jennings does not finish as wide receiver 4 for the 49ers. Maybe that's a rookie who they draft. Maybe that's Ray McLeod. Maybe that is who knows, but I don't think it's going to be Jennings. I don't know. I don't know if his style fits Trey Lance. He just seems like more of a contested guy, somebody that you do have to rely on timing, that the ball has to be on you right away. And I just don't think that's going to be what we see the 49ers do much. What do you think? I mean, I could be way off. Like maybe he ends up higher. Maybe 700 yards a lot, though, for a wide receiver 4 in this offense, because if he gets 700 yards, that means Trey Lance is – we're probably talking about him as like an MVP type of guy. In my mind, that's what I think, just because, again, they have a lot of mouths to feed.
Or there's a ton of injuries, which is
right,
which horrible is, news. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not what you want. But what do you think? What do you think Jennings or has to happen for Jennings to reach 1,000 yards? Or sorry, 700 yards.
Yeah, I'm probably somewhere between the commenter, Kif, I think is how you pronounce his name, and what you were saying, right? I don't think Jennings is gonna be, you know, way bottom of the barrel wide receiver four either, but I don't think he's going to get 700 yards either. I think he's going to be exactly what he was this season, right? Impact player on third down. Yeah, big red zone target. Someone that makes timely plays, but less volume. You know, he has more quality plays that you remember. You're like, he made that play on third down. But when you look back at his like total numbers, you're like, oh, he only had like 40 catches or something like that. I still think he's useful in the run game. He's a fantastic blocker. His physicality, his energy, probably still going to be needed, right, on the team. But I do agree that they're transitioning away from the yak guy to someone that has more speed and can create before the catch, right, down the field, vertical threat. Just based off the players that they've had visits in terms of draft prospects or the players that they've brought in free agency, right, whether that's Malik Turner or Marcus Johnson or Ray McCloud. It just feels like they're going speed, 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 which makes sense, right? Speed kills in the NFL. And so, yeah, I do see a transition, but I don't think Jennings is going to completely drop off either.
No, that was a good question, and that was good because it's nice to have a different point of view, and you forget about all these guys that they do have on the roster. All right, let's turn the page here, and let's go to another guy who's going to get extended that we don't talk about. Is it just because it's a foregone conclusion? Probably. So Nick Bosa is also up for an extension this summer, and it's going to happen. How much he gets paid is probably going to surprise a lot of people. Like, we know he's going to reset the market. Nick Bosa is going to be the highest paid edge rusher of all time once that contract happens in July. Again, when we see the numbers, whether it's like 80, 90 million guaranteed, the first reaction is going to be like, holy cow. And then you're going to watch his highlights and be like, yeah, that makes sense. I would pay him too. Why do you think we're not talking about it? Is it because like he's one of the best players in the NFL and, you know, there's nothing really to talk about here?
Yeah, it's exactly that. I mean, Nick Bosa is going to set the price and the 49ers are likely going to have to oblige and say, okay, we'll pay you that. Like, what is their argument? That he got hurt, you know, and missed one season? I could see that. But outside of that, like, high character guy in terms of, you know, what he brings football character wise to the team. On field production off the charts, right? Off the field hasn't caused anything. And so he's exactly what you want in a football player on your team. Brings toughness, plays through just about everything. You know, high motor, high character, just everything you'd want in a 49er. And he plays a premium position at edge rusher, something that you don't have, you know, just someone there waiting in the wings or someone you can draft easily, right? So you just have to pay him what he demands. And we were looking at Joey Bosa's contract, which is a little older now, but he got a five-year extension worth $135 million. So that's $27 million annually in the extension with $78 million guaranteed at signing. So he got $80 million a couple of years ago at $27 million. I do think Bosa is headed for the $30 million range. I think he could cross 30. I think Tyreek Hill really wanted to hit that number, right? Be the first non-quarterback to get $30 million. I think Bosa is going to be the second. And I think you're talking $80, $90 million guaranteed. Kind of right between Bosa and Watt. And the annual pushes him to be the highest paid edge rusher ever.
Knowing the 49ers, you know, just negotiate with hardball tactics, is there any chance that they hold the year he missed, something that Bosa could not control because he tore his ACL? Do they hold that against him when it comes down to, you know, negotiating this contract? Like, do they save 7-10 million? Like, maybe that's that. And of course, it might not show up, you know, in the large number, but, you know, in the nitty-gritty details, are they able to save that money and maybe benefit from signing a player down the line?
100%. They probably also hold the fact that he wasn't voted to be an all-pro this season against him, right? Because they'll be like,
something else he cannot control.
Right. Well, they'll be like, well, TJ Watt, for instance, had, I think, two defensive player of the years or one defensive player of the year award. He had a couple all-pros, and they'd look at Bosa and be like, well, you only have one of those. Even though it was out of his control, he probably was deserving of it. So that's just how negotiating goes, right? The 49ers love the crap out of Nick Bosa, but they're going to make it seem like, you know, he didn't accomplish as much as some of these other guys, so that they can get him for whatever they value him at, right? And that's just how negotiation goes. And I think Nick Bosa, unlike Deebo Samuel, isn't going to publicly voice his frustration. You know, he's not going to go to Instagram and like wipe stuff or, you know, make comments or whatever. He's just, that's just not his personality. They're just two different. One's a little bit more low key than the other. And I think even if Bosa was getting
just a little bit,
yeah, even if the negotiations were going contentiously, I don't think we'd ever get wind of that in terms of Nick Bosa.
Yeah, just something I was wondering, just as far as, you know, we know he's going to get paid. There's no doubt about it. But I always wonder from the team side of things, like how greedy the 49ers are going to get and how much that ticks Bosa off. And, of course, it's all going to work out in the end. I just wish – I'd love to be a fly on the wall just to see how those things work out. Okay, before we get out of here, let's talk about the prospect list of the 49ers. They are close to 30 visits now, and they've just had a couple – or they had a couple more just report I believe they met with a safety late on Tuesday night. So as it stands, before that, yesterday afternoon, they had 9 defensive linemen in. They've had 5 DBs, 4 wide receivers, 3 offensive linemen, 2 running backs, a linebacker, and a tight end. So that tells you this is another year where they are going to be in the trenches. There's no doubt about it. And that's, yeah, if you ever listen to John Lynch speak anytime before he's talking about the draft, they're going to build through the defensive line. That is what they do. Their philosophy isn't to invest in the secondary. And that prospect visit list, you know, 9 compared to 5, that tells you all you need to know about how they think about team building. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? So they rotate a ton of defensive linemen. They want to keep their guys fresh. That way they're healthy down the stretch and they're healthy come the fourth quarter, or they're fresh down for the fourth quarter. So does this tell you, I guess, maybe the order of where they're going to be at in the draft? So if come pick 61, since they're looking at 9 defensive linemen, maybe they have narrowed their search down to an edge rusher at 61, come back in the third round and talk about DB and wide receiver. You can go in a lot of different directions here, but I guess what stands out to you when we're talking about just the number of defensive linemen they've seen compared to the rest of the, or the other positions?
Yeah, the edge rusher or the defensive lineman numbers what stood out. And the majority of those guys were edge rushers. And so, you know, it became pretty clear you've got Nick Bosa. And then opposite of him, you got Samson Mebukam, who's put on some weight, I think I saw on Instagram. But he's headed in the final year of his deal. Charles Omenihu, 1-year deal. Jordan Willis, 1-year deal. You know, they got a bunch of these guys. Kerry Hyder, 1-year deal. That they just rotate through, right? Bargainman guys that come in, contribute. But aren't necessarily long-term mainstays on the defensive line. And I think they're trying to find that edge rusher opposite of Bosa, right? You pay Bosa. Now we need a cheaper option opposite of him that we can just rely on. 1-2 on the turbo defensive line is what they call it, right? Alpha, Bravo, and Turbo, I think. I think Turbo NASCAR is what they call it. Yeah, NASCAR, that's what it is. What they call their pass rushing unit. And so I think it gives you a window into their mindset that, A, we knew they prioritized defensive line, but they're looking strongly at it. And I would not be surprised if that's where they go at 61.
Yeah, it makes the most sense with how the roster is built. And you just brought up Samson Ebukam. So, yeah, has another year left on his deal. Again, we've talked about this before. You don't want to wait until that position is an actual need. And who knows what they get out of Ebukam. Again, he's essentially going into his second year as an edge rusher. So he still is going to develop just like a younger player would. And you would think that he would be better, but assuming that these players, like their trajectory is just going to go up the more that they play, like that's naive. And teams who stay the same get worse. So it would make more sense to just continue to bring in bodies, bring in athletes. And, you know, if they're raw, that's why you have Chris Kocurek. That's why you pay him a lot of money, because he's very good at what he does to develop those players. So, D-line's probably going to be one of the first 2 picks, and I think we can all agree with that. I'm interested to see how long they wait for safety. I think safety is a big need. Visiting with 5 DBs tells us that they view safety as a need as well. Again, Jaquaski Tartt is still a free agent. When does he get signed? Do you think that's just going to be around training camp? Is it already at that stage of his career? And I don't think it's going to be with the 49ers, but I guess it is a little surprising to see some of the players receive deals. But I guess then again, The Honey Badger is still available too. So
yeah, Tyrann Mathieu, Terrell Edmonds, some good safeties to left. And so I don't think he has much of a market right now. And I would imagine he's closer to, you know, post draft, after May 5th, right? After May 5th is when the comp pick formula goes away. And I feel like when you see some of these veterans signed.
So the one position that did stand out to me was they met with a couple of running backs, and I don't think that'll be the last running back that they meet with. I also think that we will see a running back selected in that Elijah Mitchell range, you know, sometime on day three, whether it's the sixth round, maybe it's in the fifth round. That is going to ruffle some feathers. And I don't think it should, because as well as Elijah Mitchell did play last season, he missed a handful of games. And when that happens in a Kyle Shanahan offense where they're going to give the running back the ball, you need a running back who you can rely on. I don't know if Elijah Mitchell – all right, I guess I don't know how to – I don't know how I want to phrase this, but I don't think that Elijah Mitchell is as good as some others think he is. And I think that he – you know, the team can upgrade from him, which seems like a crazy thing to say, just, you know, when you remember what you remember based on, you know, what Elijah Mitchell produced last year. But I think you can get that type of production from a lot of running backs. And again, if you're not healthy, none of that matters. So they need a guy who can stay healthy. And that's where, you know, that's why they're going to continue to go through the draft. So it wouldn't be a surprise to see. I mean, this happens every year at the Kyle Shanahan offense, not just on the 49ers. A guy who led the offense in rushing last year winds up RB3 the next year. That's just how things go. But I guess my takeaway was, don't be surprised if a running back is selected higher than you think because of what Elijah Mitchell showed last year, and not the good version. I mean, just like the injuries piling up.
Yeah, don't disagree. I think running back depth is always valuable. Trey Sermon posting some workout videos, so you know he's going to be ready to go. So hopefully he has more of an impact. I'm sure they'll add a running back. They always add a running back. Right. And, you know, interestingly enough, this season, no Bobby Turner. So, you know, Anthony Lynn is scouting that position. So maybe you get a different angle, you know, into how they view the running back position. And we'll see if that produces something different.
Yeah. And with, even if Elijah Mitchell does stay healthy, they need a third down back. They need a guy who can pass protect. They need a guy who Lance can dump the ball off to. Shanahan's offense is at its best when they can split a running back out and, like, he's out in the slot or he's out wide. We saw with Kyle Juszczyk, but they need a guy who can actually run a little, like, who has game-changing speed out there. That's when his offense really unlocks. And Tevin Coleman with the Falcons, obviously, that was a big reason why they had success, just because they were throwing, like, slot fades to him. But we never really saw that when Coleman was with the 49ers. They started to go that direction, but he got hurt that game in the Jets. And so, yeah, I would imagine just more ways to unlock the offense, just getting more of a playmaker in here. But, yeah, I think that'll do it for us, just because, you know, draft coming up in a couple weeks. Again, just be on the lookout for what positions the team is bringing in, not so much who. Right. It could be for a medical recheck. It could just be that they want to get, you know, they need to confirm some information. Maybe they want to see him work out, but more often than not, it's for something that they can't see on the film. So, again, it'll just give us a better idea of what positions they're looking at. But follow me on Twitter, KP_show. Again, just be trying to work on more and more draft stuff as we get closer. Akash, where can we find you?
Follow me at Twitter at AKASHANAB. Subscribe to the podcast, Niners Nation Podcast Network. Appreciate you for listening. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Drop a like, drop a comment. We appreciate everyone for hanging with us. And go Niners.